Principles of Economics, My Complete Guide to Understanding Economics, is now available in hardcover, audiobook, and ebook from SaifEddin.com, Amazon, and many more booksellers worldwide. And now, I am also teaching a course based on this book on my website, SaifEddin.com. Principles of Economics will run the whole academic year, from September to June, and will have a new lecture every 2 weeks, as well as weekly live online discussion seminars open to learners from all over the world and from all walks of life. Whether you're a student, a professional, or a retiree, you are making economic decisions every day, and this course will arm you with the wisdom of centuries of economists to improve your economic decision-making. You'll also get a free book of Principles of Economics if you sign up for the course. Go to SaifEddin.com and sign up now. The Bitcoin Standard Podcast is brought to you by Orange Pill App, the Bitcoin-only social network that connects you with high-signal Bitcoiners, events, and now merchants as well. If you're like me and can't stop talking about Bitcoin, you know how challenging it can be to talk to the no-coiners and how nice it is to talk to someone who gets you. With the Orange Pill app, you can find the Bitcoiners near you and they can replace the no-coiners in your life. You can organize events and meetups with local Bitcoiners, and wherever you travel, you can meet up with local Bitcoiners all while being as anonymous as you like. So if you want to build your local network of Bitcoiners, find a Bitcoin meetup or merchants accepting Bitcoin, head over to orangepillapp.com to sign up or download the app from the App Store or Google Play Store and send me a DM so we can get connected. The Bitcoin Standard Podcast is brought to you by CoinKite. CoinKite are my favorite makers of Bitcoin hardware. They produce the legendary OpenDime, the first Bitcoin bearer asset, as well as the reliable Cold Card hardware wallet, the excellent stainless steel seed plates for storing your seed phrases, and the block clock. Now, CoinKite have produced the Sats card, a card the size of a credit card which can store Bitcoin and works great as a gift. CoinKite have just produced a limited edition gorgeous Bitcoin Standard Sats card, which carries the Bitcoin Standard logo, and you can get it from coinkite.shop/Bitcoin Standard. Use the code Bitcoin Standard to get 5% off your purchase. This podcast is also brought to you by the Bitcoin Way, your professional Bitcoin IT team offering you personalized, secure, and comprehensive solutions for every step along your Bitcoin journey. The Bitcoin Way offer live concierge service to guide you with your Bitcoin cold storage, running your node, privacy best practices, inheritance planning, corporate strategy, and multi-sig solutions. They don't touch your coins, they guide you through the process of acquiring your coins and securing them. If you'd like to make your setup safer and more reliable, book a consult with them and see what they have to suggest. If you want to give someone the gift of Bitcoin, get them this professional service that will ensure they start off knowing exactly how to manage their coins and not lose them. Go to thebitcoinway.com and start Bitcoining more confidently. Hello, welcome to another episode of the Bitcoin Standard Podcast. Our guest today is Tony Esbick from The Bitcoin Way. The Bitcoin Way is a new startup that I'm proud to be sponsoring this podcast. The Bitcoin Way offers a full-on dedicated Bitcoin IT team, offering specialized secure solutions for self-custody, security, and privacy. They're committed to guiding you through every step of your Bitcoin journey with a focus on personalized and comprehensive support. I've tried the Bitcoin Way. I've had them help my wife set up a wallet, and I cannot recommend them enough. I think this is something that I have wanted in the Bitcoin space for a while. I've told many people over the years that they should do something like this because it is something that there's a big demand for. A lot of people want to invest in Bitcoin. They want to buy Bitcoin, but they're not very clear about how to do it. And it's not something that is very easy. It's not something that you could just tell somebody to do in 15 minutes and they'll get over it. They need to really figure out exactly what they're doing. They need to understand what they're doing. And it takes some time to figure those things out. Some Bitcoiners like to say, well, self-custody is easy. Taking charge of your Bitcoins is easy. It's simple. It isn't. It's not impossible. It's like learning to drive a car. You need some time, you need to figure it out, but once you figure it out, you can do it, and then you can do it safely. And I think it's not something that's easy for me to do because you always want to advise people on how to do it, but you're always very careful about how you advise them because you're afraid that if they follow your advice, things that might seem obvious to you might not seem obvious to them. And so they do it quickly and then they might make a mistake and then they might lose their Bitcoin. So I'm always hesitant about telling people how to self-custody because I think I would rather be there doing it hands-on. And that's just not something that I have the time to do. So I've always told people you should be doing something like this. And I think there's a lot of demand for it. Well, the Bitcoin Way does that. The Bitcoin Way, you could book a call with them and they will guide you and walk you through the steps one by one, offer you all the different possibilities of how to go through it and explain to you how to do it. And I'm very happy to be hosting them, hosting Tony today as a representative of the Bitcoin Way to talk about how they do this. So Tony, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, man. Happy to be here.
All right. So let's begin, first of all, by telling us a little bit about your background and your partners and how you guys came across this idea and started it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've been living in the tech world my whole life. I come from 25 years of cybersecurity, encryption, and privacy. And, you know, I bring a lot of that knowledge into the space, into the Bitcoin space, of which I've been in for a little over 6 years now. I met my partners a little over a year ago on Noster. You know, we just got to chatting around. They messaged me, asking me questions, and it sort of all fell into place throughout our discussions when we realized, you know, that there's a lot of folks that, like as you said, want to get into Bitcoin, but are hesitant to do so primarily because of the fear of the technical aspects to it. And I mean, I've been freelancing, orange pilling people on my own, you know, over the last maybe 4 years before the Bitcoin Way. And it's been very successful, but I've been doing it, you know, at my own pace, casually using my own ways, you know, applying, you know, my years and years of knowledge in the IT space and cybersecurity to do it. And throughout my conversations with Andy and Ahmed, we quickly realized, you know, based on their experiences that they've got a boatload of folks from their end that are also, you know, staying away from the space because they don't want to do anything that potentially risks their funds. So we're like, you know what, let's do this. You know, we'll put the team together, you know, we'll bring a lot of the experience, you know, that I have into this. We'll set up a team, we'll streamline the whole process for folks, and we'll break it down into bite-sized pieces. And that's exactly what we do. We made our first public debut this summer at Bitcoin Prague. The turnout was much, much bigger than we anticipated. Very, very positive when a lot of folks walked up to us and asked us, you know, like, what do you guys offer? What are you guys about? And when we explained it to them, you know, their eyes lit up. They're like, oh my God, you know, that's exactly what I want, what I need. And, you know, it took off from there. It's a lot of work. It sounds easy on the surface, but it really isn't, because when you're handholding folks in Bitcoin, essentially, you're handholding them in IT, and most folks are not comfortable in IT to begin with. So I've been in situations with, you know, high net worth individuals when we get on a call and, you know, I ask them, you know, well, open up your browser, and you get a response. Okay, what's the browser? You know, like when you get an answer on that level, you know, this is going to be a very long and slow call. So there's a lot of patience required. There's a lot of, you know, the one-to-one experience that comes into play, but that's okay. I mean, this is what we do. There are no stupid questions at the Bitcoin Way. We are very patient with everyone because we do not skip any steps. So our setups are comprehensive. They're very advanced, but at the same time, they're done in a very ABC-like manner. So when we converse with folks, I speak to them in plain English, like I'm talking to a 10-year-old, so that I make sure that they understand everything that's going on, even though I'm technically doing all the work simply by guiding them exactly what to do. And so far, the experience has been extremely positive. Folks are very, very happy with their results. And you have a lot more folks that have come from nothing that are completely sovereign after, you know, our consults. And so we're very proud of that.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting here, like at no point do you touch people's coins. You don't custody coins, you don't hold coins for people, you don't offer a custody service. You don't touch anybody's coin. You just get with them on a video conferencing call and you tell them what they should do. And at no point are you able to access any of their stuff. So this is done in a very secure way. And, you know, to be extra sure, I'd recommend people go along with you and do all of those, the setup as a balloon trial, but then repeat the whole thing on their own with another setup just to make sure that they're doing it while their computer is not connected, while there's no chance that anybody could eavesdrop or whatever But I think that's an excellent and very valuable service, because most other ways of self-custody, either you're going to have to do it on your own, or you're going to have to be, well, I shouldn't say self-custody. Most of the ways of custody involve trusting somebody else. You're going to be handing them their coin, your coins, and you're trusting them not just to be honest, but also you're trusting all their business practices. And as we saw over the last couple of years, custody models, leaving your coins on exchanges, turned out to be an extremely, extremely expensive mistake for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have zero remote control on any of our sessions. You know, we don't control any of anyone's computer. It's done via a video call like we're on right now. There is occasional screen sharing that's involved, but the screen sharing is 100% controlled by the end user. We don't control it, because at some point, obviously, we need to see what you're looking at in order to be able to guide you. And on the moments where I know there's going to be whether it's a passphrase or a seed phrase that's going to come on screen and what have you, we advise you ahead of time to turn off the screen sharing, to take care of all that information, make sure it's off screen before you re-enable the screen sharing. And that's how we proceed. Should there be a mistake, like an oops moment where something flashes, it's no problem. We stop the call, we rewind 5-10 minutes. I ask you to repeat the entire process. So, and we keep doing this as often as it takes, so that there's no more oops moments. This way, you're 1,000% sure that no eyes other than yours have seen that data. And we know that, you know, we have zero responsibility on that front. We are not a financial institution, so we don't buy or sell anything. We are purely a knowledge-based service here to guide anyone into proper self-custody. We don't sell any hardware or software either. We make recommendations based on a strict series of tests that we perform in-house. So we're not paid to promote any products. When we send out a list with regards to what cold store, what signing devices you should be buying, they're a list based on our tests. The user decides to buy whichever one you prefer, and we will help you configure it properly the way it's meant to be. Same thing for the Bitcoin node. That's how we proceed, and we'll continue to proceed for the foreseeable future, because the Bitcoin way is designed to be neutral ground. Like, we are sort of like Switzerland of the knowledge here in Bitcoin. We're not here to push anything over another. We're here to make sure that you're safe and that your money is safe and that you're sleeping well at night, no matter what happens around you.
Excellent. So yeah. Tell us, what are the things that you guide people through? What processes?
Yeah, initially we offer a free 30-minute call to anyone. Okay, there's no commitment or obligation on anything. You just call to have a conversation. We see where you're at, what you know, what you don't know, what your plans are and what have you. We eliminate any of the FUD that you may have come with, you know, any misunderstandings and what have you, to make sure that you're very clear why you're coming into Bitcoin, that you're not, you know, you don't have some silly plan into buying it and then selling it later on because you think you made a profit in fiat terms. You know, that's not what the whole point of this is. So we make sure that, you know, the user has a very robust understanding on that front. And then we move into stages. So the first stage usually begins with the cold storage. We make sure that, you know, they have a proper cold wallet, you know, on hand. We set that up completely. The next step is the Bitcoin node, because we're very strong proponents that every single Bitcoiner must categorically, no exceptions, be running a Bitcoin node, because without one, you are neither sovereign or private, and you cannot say with 100% certainty that you are verifying using, you know, an authentic Bitcoin blockchain if you're connecting some public server that you have no control over. So you want to make sure that all your transactions are going through your own circle of trust, which is your own hardware. The whole point, don't trust, verify. That's the only way you're going to do it. And with regards to privacy, without your node, you are literally leaving fingerprints of all your transactions all over the place. That may not seem like a big deal right now, because Bitcoin's price maybe is still, you know, not that interesting to many folks. But I can assure you, once Bitcoin hits parabolic levels in numbers, you're going to wish you had a Bitcoin node and you were not leaving these bird trails of your transactions on other people's nodes on public servers. So this is where the Bitcoin node recommendation is strongly recommended. And then once that's set up, we tie it all together, connect the wallets, you know, via encrypted connections all the time to route through your node, no matter where you are physically, you know, whether you're home, on vacation, on the moon, it doesn't really matter. As long as you're online, you're going through your own ecosystem. Once that foundation is established, then we can do whatever you like. So what we recommend folks to look into, either it's coin joining, learning how to buy no KYC Bitcoin. If they have a business, integrating Bitcoin payments into that business, setting up inheritance plan. And recently we offered privacy focused collaborative custody, you know, where we help folks upgrade their entire setup from a single SIG to a much more secure multi-SIG. But we push that much later on. We don't recommend this right off the gate, because we need to make sure that everyone fundamentally has a solid understanding of single SIG to begin with. And then once we feel that they're comfortable enough, that they know it like they know their own name, then we can slowly progress towards something more secure should they want to. But, you know, with best tips and practices and, you know, a lot of like cybersecurity elements into play, even if you don't go down that road, as long as you're disciplined and you follow like the proper guidelines, you should be fine. And we ensure that, you know, every one of our consults is unique in the sense that they're not susceptible to what I call like a copy paste attack. So like when I set somebody up in a certain way, and then I set up, let's say, somebody else, there's always going to be one or two things different about each individual, just in case someone has the funny idea of trying to steal the other one's person, thinking they're set up the same way they are. They will fail because of that, you know, one or two distinguishing factors, you know, that will break the attack vector. So that's something, you know, that we're very keen about. And what I guess sets us apart is that we can do this. And you can only do this, you know, when you have a lot of cybersecurity experience that you integrate into the whole mold of Bitcoin. And we go as far as securing your internet, as far as securing your computer, your phone, all the elements that interface with your Bitcoin ecosystem, we can handle because they're all part of it. It's not just a wallet and a node. You're online. So if your router is compromised, that could be a problem at some point. So we can lock that down. Your computer, is it your computer? Is it a work computer? You know, like ideally you want it to be your personal computer. Are you using it for many other crazy things? You know, we sort of limit the use for your Bitcoin machine to specific things. So you're not inadvertently downloading things you don't want on that machine. So bottom line is we push the message that your whole being your own bank, you have to guard this whole setup with your life, because it's going to be pretty much the most valuable thing that you own going forward. And you don't want to take shortcuts. You don't want to cut corners. You don't want to be cheap. You can do this with anything else in your life, but not with this, because if you screw up your money at any point in time, there's no customer support to refund you. It's gone. And the only way you're going to get it back at that point is to earn it, because, you know, by that time, you know, the Bitcoin on exchanges would have completely evaporated. And the only way you're going to make it is, you know, to provide a service to someone. And if it's good enough, they will pay you.
I think that's, that's very, very encouraging. Generally, I think a lot of the no coiners will say things like, Bitcoin will never catch on because it's too complicated. Nobody wants to use a hardware wallet. Nobody wants to have all of their money stored in 12 words. Nobody wants to have all of these complicated setups for their money. For all of their faults, even people who might be sympathetic to the problems of the fiat system will tell you that for all of its faults, there is something nice about the peace of mind of having a bank and having the bank just be there and standing in your in the way of anybody who wants to spend your money, including you. And I mean, a lot of Bitcoiners will complain about, I was traveling and my credit card didn't work and I tried to call the bank and they wouldn't let me. And yeah, of course, it's inconvenient, but I mean, credit card fraud is a serious thing. And sometimes people will take your data and they will use it. And many times people will complain about the opposite, which is somebody managed to get the number of my credit card and they used it. And now there's $5,000 of charges and my bank let it go. And it's tempting here to be overly critical of the fiat system in a sense of they get it wrong, but type one and type two errors are inevitable in any kind of screening mechanism. They are never going to be able to get it right every single time. They're going to have some errors in which they deny you from sending your money, and they're going to have some errors in which they allow others to spend your money when you don't want them to. It's inevitable, and they keep setting up systems to try and make this. So I think even if you are sympathetic to the problems of the fiat system, you can sort of see that there is some value in the idea of having others handling your money rather than you, because it just allows you to escape this. And then that seems like it's a lot more tempting than just taking full responsibility of your money, because on your own, who knows what might happen? You might mess it up. Somebody might steal it. Things could be wrong. There's a trend among Bitcoiners to respond to this by saying, look, it's just 12 words. Can you write down 12 words? If you can write down 12 words, then that's it, or 24 words sometimes. If you can write down 24 words or 12 words, then you've got your Bitcoin, and that's it. But it really isn't that simple. I think this is a very counterproductive message that some Bitcoiners give out. Just because we want to win the argument with the fiaters doesn't mean we should make false advertising. It's not just about writing down 12 words. Any 8-year-old can write down 12 words, but it's a lot more challenging than that. You want to write down the 12 words and never lose them. Make sure you always have access to them. And also, you want to write down the 12 words and make sure that nobody else has access to them. And that's a very tricky problem, because it's easy to remember 12 words. You can memorize them, and you can write 100 copies and spread them all over your house, put them on the fridge, put them in your socks drawer. You could put them everywhere, and then you'll be sure, you'll email them to yourself. You'll write them on the billboard in your office. It's very easy to remember 12 words. But the tricky part is, the easier you make it for you to remember them and to have access to them, the easier you make it for others to have access to them. And that's the tricky part, because anybody who lays eyes on those 12 words can take all of your Bitcoin. So that's the tricky part. And it's not a trivial challenge. But at the same time, just because it's not trivial does not mean that it's impossible. And I always like the metaphor of driving a car. When cars came along, I'm sure a lot of people thought, yeah, there's no way I'm going to learn how to put a key in a thing and then handle the steering wheel, press the gas, and then figure out when to press the brakes and when to press the gas, and then use the clutch and use the gear. It's just enormously complicated. Like, a horse is so much simpler. You just smack the horse and it goes, and then you pull it when you want to stop, and then it stops. Clearly, cars are never going to catch on. And now look at us. Everybody uses cars these days. Everybody gets into cars. Everybody knows how to drive, and it can be learned. So I think it's useful to just understand that it is challenging, but challenges are made to be overcome. And it's not an impossible challenge. It's a simple challenge to overcome if you just set your mind to it. So I wanted to get some of your opinions on some of those things. So when it comes to custody, what do you guys recommend? Can you give us some of your recommendations in terms of how to do custody?
Yeah, I mean, just to touch up on what you said, you're absolutely right. But I think most of these excuses or complaints that we hear, you know, along those lines, usually come from folks that are still living in, you know, financially comfortable locations, you know, where they haven't really been subjected to anything that might threaten their notion that their money is not safe in a bank. I mean, but as we've seen in many countries recently, one being Lebanon, where, you know, you go to bed one night and then you wake up the next day, then nothing's working, right? So when you've experienced something like this, where your entire life savings, when the life savings of an entire country are literally stolen overnight, your excuses about, you know, oh, it's too hard, it's not convenient and all that, quickly disappear along with it. And learning to self-custody, in my opinion, is not an option. It's a must if you're going to have any remote chance of protecting your future time and energy with regards to your money. Because if you think leaving your funds in the control of somebody else, especially somebody else that you know hates you and has designed a system to continuously steal from you, you're in for a rude awakening. And this is a message that we try to pass along as nicely as possible while stressing the seriousness and urgency of it. You know, we can't stress that enough. I mean, there's no place on earth where you think you are going to be unaffected by the collapse of fiat currency. That's a delusion that a lot of folks unfortunately hide behind. And it's financial suicide, as far as I'm concerned. You know, you're putting yourself in a very compromising position. How we push this whole self-custody thing is that we just explain it as it's not hard. No one's too stupid to learn it. but you have to learn it. It's something new. We've never seen it before. You've never had the need to do self-custody before. And now you do. Because if you don't, you have your other option is to just give in to whatever your government is going to offer you. And as you can see, they are more than happy to offer you something that'll completely enslave you to their system for the rest of your life. So if you value your dignity, your freedom, that of your family, of your kids, you will sit down and you will take the time that it takes to learn self-custody, especially when there's plenty of resources out there that will, you know, are willing and able to help you. And this is, and we are just one of them. We sit down and we recommend specific hardware. Okay. That's where we start. We tell you, okay, this is what you need. Step one, you need the hard wallet. This is what it's for. And this is how you use it. We do all the work for you. You don't have to do anything with regards to setting it up. We set it up for you. We tell you exactly, press here, check this, do this. So within an hour or two, you are completely bulletproof and airtight on that front. And once all these elements are in place, we just show you how to use it. So essentially, that's what most people want to know. How do I send and how do I receive while knowing that my funds, my savings, nobody can touch them? And so when it comes to protecting these 12 words or 24 words and all that, there's a million ways to do this. There's no off-the-shelf solution. So where we come in is that we have discussions with everyone just to get to know them a bit better, to see what they're comfortable doing. Because like you said, you don't want to be in a position where folks create such a complicated maze that they get lost in it and lock themselves out of their funds at some point. That's not what this is about. And this is definitely what, you know, something can be easily avoided. Security doesn't mean complexity. It just means, you know, there's a lot of creativity involved in coming up with a super secure solution. And this is where the conversation needs to be back and forth. And eventually we strike a balance between, you know, what's secure, but what's also usable and practical for you, the end user. So that's really our approach. And you can only do this when you have a lot of experience in cybersecurity so that you can apply a lot of the scenarios that you've encountered in the past into money. Because, you know, previously cybersecurity, I've only had to deal with enterprise with regards to that. But now since, you know, Bitcoin, now it's money. Now everybody needs money. So now everybody wants to be sure that it's safe. So all of these, all of that information, all of that knowledge, all of a sudden applies automatically into that space. And so we break it down and we simplify it so that, you know, regular folks can feel at home with it very quickly.
Yeah, there is a lot of Luddite resistance to the idea that money should go online because of the fact that cybersecurity seems daunting to most people. So many people have the idea that this is unworkable. It's not for me. I don't want to ever have my money linked to my computer. My email can get hacked. My cable subscription can get hacked. All these things can become a problem. I want to keep my money out of my computer because my computer is compromised. And some people present this as a criticism of Bitcoin, that Bitcoin is being used for ransomware and Bitcoin is increasing digital crime. And for me, this is missing the point. This is really being Luddite because it's inevitable because all of our life is going online. And so all of your work, all of your work documents, all of your personal documents, everything's going online. Papers don't really matter anymore. Personally, I haven't owned papers since about 10, 15 years ago. I remember since I bought the iPhone, I recognized, I think it was 2007, I bought the iPhone 1, and I understood, oh, wow, this is going to change my life. I don't need papers anymore. And within a few months, I got rid of all the papers that I have. Everything that I had in paper form was either scanned, uploaded, or I typed it into a computer. And since then, everything that I own has been digital, and it's been massively productive because I can search for it. I can copy paste into new documents. It's enormously productive. And that's inevitable. That's what's happening everywhere. So all of our life is going digital. And the idea that you're just going to leave your money out of it, keep your money analog while everything in your life becomes digital is useless. And even if you did do that, you still need to learn proper cybersecurity because otherwise, you're going to get compromised in all kinds of ways, even if your money's not online. So these businesses that are having problems with ransomware, these problems could happen even without ransomware being an issue. Your competitors, your clients, your customers could spy on you if you don't have your ducks in order in terms of your cybersecurity. So you have to fix that, whether Bitcoin exists or not. In fact, what Bitcoin is going to do is that it's going to provide an incentive for everybody to up their game and start taking this seriously. The syllabus for my new online economics course, Principles of Economics, is now available on saifedean.com. The course will take place over 18 lectures, each based on one chapter from my new book, Principles of Economics, which will be available for free as an ebook for everyone registering for the course. Lectures will be released once every 2 weeks on Mondays, starting on the 25th of September, 2023, and will be available in video and audio format. Live discussion seminars will be held once a week on Thursdays at alternating time slots, 12 hours apart, to ensure learners can attend from all over the world. I'm happy to announce that I have set up my new publishing house and online bookstore, The Safe House, which will be publishing and delivering the best Bitcoin and Austrian economics books worldwide in hardcover, audiobook, and ebook formats. Go to thesafehouse.com to buy my latest book, Principles of Economics, as well as the Fiat Standard and the Bitcoin Standard. And now I'm also publishing Fiat Food, Matthew Lisiak's amazing investigation into how inflation ruined our diet and health. And I'm also publishing Lynn Alden's Broken Money, her masterful exploration of the failures of the global financial system and how Bitcoin fixes it. This is a Bitcoiner's bookshop, so the books are printed in beautiful cloth hardcover made to last, with a nice colored dust jacket on top. Go to thesafehouse.com and get yours now.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Everything about us is digital. So using, you know, coming up with these lame excuses, it's they're not really valid points, because you can dismiss it all you want, but sooner or later, you know, when your turn comes, you know, and you pay the price for it, you know, then pain will become your motivator and your teacher. And you will, you know, hopefully sit down and, you know, learn and take proper measures so that it doesn't happen to you again. We are trying to prevent this from happening with regards to money, because, you know, money is not an option in anyone's life. It's not like you're buying a table or a chair. You absolutely need money. So in order to protect those funds from whatever, you know, whatever form of theft, you have to learn how to own it. And so again, self-custody, it's just a new concept. It's really not that hard, but you just have to, you know, be willing to sit down and accept that this is something new that you're going to have to learn. And at some point in the not so distant future, I believe that the concept of self-custody will become the norm, and that, you know, just the thought about, you know, letting somebody else control your money will be, you know, associated with some form of mental illness. Like, you'd have to be crazy to do this. With regards to self-custody, though, here's another point for those that don't necessarily want to do it themselves. If you have a trusted individual, you know, the Uncle Jim, you can at least take your first step that way. I do this with some of my friends and family. They're like, you know what? You do it, man. I don't want to do anything. I trust you. Set it up in a way that, you know, you can't take my money, obviously, but that, you know, I don't have to do any of the wizardry that you're doing. So, you know, I do this, like, I'm like the Uncle Jim. So a lot of folks, it's easier for them, maybe as a step one, to find someone like that, that they can, you know, begin with. But again, that really necessitates that you have absolute trust in that individual. Okay. Obviously there's trust. The whole point is ideally not to have to trust anyone but yourself. But if you're really like keen on not doing anything and you have that option, well, then, you know, take it. You know, it's better than doing nothing and leaving, you know, your fate to the hands of the government. Because if you do that, you're 100% guaranteed to lose everything. Or they're going to tie you to a digital ID where you're going to lose a lot more than your money. It's not a hard choice, you know, once you understand what the stakes are. It's either, you know, your life, your dignity, and your freedom, or nothing. You know, you're like a government donkey, and whatever they tell you to do, you have to do. Otherwise, you don't eat.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to what kind of life you want.
Yeah, it's looking increasingly like this is the case. If you look at how central banks are acting, I mean, inflation is becoming more and more serious problem all over the world. you see this in the US and Europe. Now leaders are gaslighting people into telling them, into believing that, look, it's everybody's fault but us that inflation is happening. The money supply is increasing, but that has nothing to do with the prices. The prices are going up because of all kinds of weird things. Supply chains and climate change. And my favorite genre now is Beyonce and Taylor Swift.
Swimming pools.
Yeah. Beyonce and Taylor Swift have been blamed for inflation in serious articles. Yeah, because apparently they organize concerts and then people spend a lot of money on those concerts. And that causes prices to rise, which is, of course, ridiculous. Because if people are spending a lot of money on concerts, they're spending less money on other things. So maybe, yes, the prices of concerts are going up because people really, really like Beyonce and Taylor Swift. But that comes at the expense of other things. So the price of football matches will have to go down because people aren't going to watch football because they're going to watch Taylor Swift or something. But the only way that the prices of everything will go up, apples and oranges and Taylor Swift and football games and computers, is if the money supply is going up. But they do have the intellectual infrastructure laid out for you to normalize a lot of inflation. And the technical infrastructure for doing it is the central bank digital currency, which is going to allow them to create inflation much more efficiently. And that's going to make their job easier. And then, of course, it's going to make surveillance and control also a lot easier. So that's going to be really, really something that is going to be very important for most people in the coming years. And the only way out of that is Bitcoin. It's really looking increasingly more like a necessity rather than just a way to get rich. I think more and more people are beginning to get it. It's not just that number go up means, yeah, we can buy a Lambo. No, number go up means you'll be able to afford to eat real food rather than soy rations from your central bank's designated providers.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's but a lot of people still live in fear. This is, you know, what I still see. You know, they still, you know, no matter what you tell them, they still believe that somehow the government's going to find a way to screw it up and to destroy Bitcoin and to lose all any money that, you know, they may possibly put in Bitcoin. So essentially they're stuck in this fear cycle, which, you know, keeps them stuck in the same system that continues to siphon funds away from them. So it's essentially you become like almost like a hamster on a wheel. You know, you're stuck in the same place, going nowhere. The only way, you know, to come out of this system, come out of this like craziness, is to literally come out of this system. And that's, you know, to start saving, you know, your time and energy into an asset that, you know, no one can take away from you. No one can manipulate. No one can print to oblivion, and no one can tell you what to do with it when you want to pay somebody. You don't need anybody's permission. You know, that's ludicrous. And there's no risk of you waking up one day and your account is frozen. I mean, you know, these are all big deals. And until people experience them, I don't think the majority will believe it. You know, like you have to go through a certain amount of pain before you actually believe and learn. So in my opinion, and I hope I'm wrong, but I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to get destroyed before they completely come around and understand that this is not a joke. This is not a movie. This is not limited to certain cities or countries. This is a reality. And it's just a question of when my turn comes. And now it's here. So now what do I do?
I agree. I agree very, very, very wholeheartedly. I think it's having lived in Lebanon, you're familiar with what's going on over there. It's disheartening how people just don't see this, because normalcy bias is very strong. Everybody wants to believe that their central bank and their government are out there. They're going to do something. I remember just a few months ago, I was in Lebanon, and I remember overhearing a conversation at a restaurant, just the table next to me. People were saying something along the lines of, If I were to go and try and get my money out of the bank right now, I can't remember what exactly the number they were saying, but it was something in the range of 15 or 20% of the deposits that they had. And these two people were discussing and saying, no way I'm going to go get 15, 20%. That's insane. And for me, if you can still get 15 and 20%, you should run to the bank, go and get it. Yeah. Because you're going to get a lot less tomorrow and a lot less the day after and a lot less the day after. And the people who are still holding out and refusing to take the 15 and 20% had the chance to take 95% and 90% and 80% and 70%. And at every point they thought, no, I want to get it all. And now here they are at 15, 20% left. They're still refusing to get it. And I remember overhearing a conversation where two people, one guy was telling the other, look, at some point, they're going to have to all get together and figure out a solution for the people who got ruined by the banking problem. And it's just amazing. It's amazing, this mentality, that they really think there's somebody out there that is going to sit down and look out for them. I mean, even after the money's evaporated, even after the banks are bankrupt, the central bank is bankrupt, the central government is bankrupt, they still think somebody out there can push a magic button and give us our money back. Maybe not 100%, maybe we'll get 80%, maybe we'll get 70%. You know, they're bargaining with it right now. But they think somebody out there has the ability to just press that button and make their banking deposits whole. And of course, the problem with that is that nobody has that button. Nobody has that magic button. Nobody took the money. And this is the key thing. It's not like one politician took the money. And now, if we just vote hard enough next time, or if we protest hard enough, then we can pressure the rest of the politicians to force this guy to bring the money back. The money isn't there because it was never there. It was an illusion. It was always fake money. And you were just being told that you have a lot of money. You were being given 8, 10, 15% interest every year, and you were stacking it and believing that you had the money. And now the Ponzi's collapsed and the money isn't there. It was never there. And they can't give it to you. But people continue to believe this. And it's really sad. And I think people are going to continue to believe this. I mean, even after bad things happen, people are going to continue to want to remain in this delusion, because as painful as delusion is, it's more palatable than the ugly reality for so many people, unfortunately.
Well, it comes down to a lack of self-confidence. You know, and over the years, you know, you've been brainwashed with all sorts of information that you genuinely, a lot of folks genuinely believe it, and they have no confidence in their ability to counter that narrative that they've been fed since the day they were born. That's fundamentally the issue in countries like Lebanon. I mean, I've encountered it through conversations, through people that, you know, are well-educated, previously had money, they were well off. And yet, even after having lost everything, they still believe that somehow they're going to make it back. And, you know, like, you have these conversations with them, and you come to the realization very quickly that these folks do not understand money. That's fundamentally a big part of the problem. They don't understand money, but more importantly, they don't want to understand money in the way, you know, of the truth. They want to understand money in the way they've always known money, that this is how it is and this is how it's always going to be, and stop wasting my time with this magic internet money. That's, you know, a lot of the mentality is like this. Fortunately, there's a growing number of folks in Lebanon, you know, as small as it is still, but there's a growing number that are starting to pay attention. And they are doing this because they have come to the realization that if they don't do this, you know, this is going to be game over, like in a much worse way than it already is. But at the same time, you know, there's a big part of them where you can't blame them for not doing it, because they're completely, like, completely flatlined money-wise, that their main priority is to eat. So telling someone like this, start saving Bitcoin, is impossible, because he can't buy his loaf of bread for himself or his family with Bitcoin yet, right? So for him, his immediate need is to find a dollar somewhere, whatever, a dollar, 50 cents, $2, whatever it is, just to put anything on the table to feed folks. That's the main priority. And there's such a large percentage of the population in those shoes that for the foreseeable future, I honestly do not see how they can come out of such a rut. Time will tell. You know, maybe, you know, from outside help, I would imagine, you know, like Lebanese people, you know, they always help one another. You know, fundamentally, that, you know, would sort of trickle down to these folks. But, you know, it has to come down to a willingness to help oneself until you know someone gets to that level, they cannot be reached. You can't help someone that doesn't want to help themselves, and that's unfortunate, but it's a reality. And globally, I have a feeling the world will become split between those that are in Bitcoin and those that are not. A lot more jurisdictions, as we see, you know, are Bitcoin friendly. So there's people are going to be voting with their feet and their money moving to these places. And eventually, you know, as they say, you lead by example. So when you're living, you know, a good life, doing whatever you want, nothing's really changed for you. In fact, things have like considerably improved. While those on the other side of the world living in a, you know, the complete opposite and horrendous situations, not being able to do X, Y, and Z because of their digital score, whatever other nonsense they're stuck in, well, then they're going to start waking up and paying attention. It's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, like, I want this. How do I get to this? You know, and that's where the cascading effect, you know, starts to amplify. And there's always a solution. Like, you can always find your way around the CBDC. Even now, even before it's implemented, you know, there's already ways that people know how to get around it. They're expensive ways, but they exist. The concept of peer-to-peer is where the revolution is, you know, especially when it comes to money. You cannot stop peer-to-peer. You know, no matter what you do, you can try to scare people into thinking it's bad, but those that have a clue will ignore you instantly and will continue doing whatever it has to do because it fundamentally comes down to their survival, their freedom, and their quality of life. And I don't know any reasonable human being that's going to want to compromise on this.
Yeah, for all of the problems in Lebanon, still the reality is that today a lot more people are into Bitcoin than they were before the crisis and before all those problems. And I think that's a trend that's only continuing to amplify and over time will continue to get more and more pronounced because, as you said, people learn the hard way and they are learning the hard way. Over time, I think it's going to just continue to intensify. Now, all right, other than custody, you also offer node services. So what do you recommend there?
We only work with open source or verifiable source software and hardware, by the way. So all our recommendations have that fundamental requirement there. We don't deal with any closed source projects, regardless of who they are. Any projects that do censorship on any level, we automatically disqualify them. Any projects that collaborates with chain analysis, whether directly or indirectly, we automatically disqualify them. We have zero tolerance for any of that stuff. We really adhere to the Bitcoin ethos and the Bitcoin white paper with regards to all our consults. So we're going to do things properly or we're simply not going to do them. So those that come in and have conversations with us, you know, we explain all these things, you know, very, very well so that they understand that there's no shortcuts at any point in time. There's, you know, a very strict series of discipline steps that are required that, you know, you cannot compromise on. And as long as you follow them, you will be okay. I mean, you will be fine. So that's what we stick to. So the nodes that we recommend are all open source. Either some folks, you know, if they're technical enough, we give them the list of ingredients of components wise if you need to build a good one. Otherwise, we recommend some ready-made nodes from, you know, reputable manufacturers that, you know, have proven themselves to also, you know, adhere to the same core values that we have. And, you know, individuals, they pick the one that suits their liking, their budgets. And once they get it, they call us, we set it all up, connect it to their wallets, and they're good to go.
Yeah. Do you recommend just using your regular computer for running your node?
A lot of folks like to say this. I personally don't like to do this because, I mean, running a node, you know, like it's very taxing on the hardware. And you know, if you're going to use it on a new computer, well, then, you know, you're paying too much for, well, depending on the computer, you may be paying too much for the hardware. Bitcoin node hardware is designed for this. Like, it's designed to run 24/7, 365 days a year. You know, you're not going to worry about wear and tear and all that kind of stuff. And plus, it's limited. You're not on a computer where you can possibly maybe use it for other stuff inadvertently without paying attention and, you know, opening up a whole can of worms without noticing. I mean, if I set it up on a laptop, I know I'll be fine because, you know, of my background and my experience. But if I give it to my dad, for example, he is going to do something at some point that I'm not going to approve of. And, you know, that could potentially, you know, cause a problem. So I like to avoid these things, you know, like you put them in a box, you're going to plug it in the wall, plug it to your router, you are not going to have physical access to it. So you cannot screw it up. It sits there, it does its job, and that's it. You know, that's how it should be. And that's my preferred approach.
Yeah, there's something very satisfying about hardware that just does its job and doesn't try to be too smart and too efficient and too optimized by combining things and trying to cut corners and trying to make things work in a certain way. I think this is just intuitively very appealing for somebody like me. And I think I agree with you. It's better to just have everything out there. And that's kind of the logic of a hardware wallet as well. You want to have all of your calculations done on a computer that is separate from the computer that handles all of your emails and all of your movies and your Netflix subscription and all of these things where you're giving out data to God knows who and how, right?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, certain things you want to keep offline unless you really know what you're doing and, you know, you're disciplined and structured enough to know how to keep it all online. I mean, we have some folks that don't have anything offline simply because of the versatility and flexibility that it offers. But the way that they're structured and built online is on a whole different level. I mean, it's not like your average individual. Everything is encrypted end to end through different, you know, encrypted layers of files and what have you. And computers go offline, you know, when you're doing certain transactions, you know, there's a very strict regimen of steps and disciplined approaches when doing things online. But for most folks, it's better to keep, you know, things offline because it eliminates all that knowledge that they don't have. On a psychological level, people sleep better knowing that their things are offline. But at the same time, you know, you need to understand, like you said, you know, you have to make sure that nobody finds them and that you don't lose it either. You know, so there are ways also to protect against these things. We have like an inside competition, you know, like where I've set up a wallet with a seed phrase and I've given it out. And I'm like, if you can get the Bitcoin on this wallet, you can keep it. You know, it's been a little bit over a year now, still there. You know, and I laugh at them. I'm like, what are you waiting for? Come on, man. I gave you the words. You know, like, come on.
Wait, I don't get it. So you give people the seed phrase and they still can't get your Bitcoin?
Yeah, here's the seed phrase. If you can get to the Bitcoin inside of it, it's all yours.
But if you have the seed phrase, then you can get to the Bitcoin, right? I mean, you must have done something.
Yeah, of course I've done something, but they don't know that I've done something. As far as they know that they have my seed phrase. Now, as far, you know, most folks that don't know anything about Bitcoin, which is going to probably be your common thief, you know, that's what they're going to do. They're going to go after your seed phrase. So you give it to them. If it's structured in a proper way, you can give it to them without risking your life. Hopefully they leave you alone. And if that's the case, you just walk away and you rebuild your ecosystem and laugh at them at a distance. You can do this.
I see.
So this is where, you know, again, the whole cybersecurity thing comes in, adds a lot of value to the whole concept of self-custody because it creates a uniqueness. And there's a lot of creativity in online security and security in general. And we're very good at this. And this is where, you know, we start, you know, providing advice, you know, based on everybody's individual circumstances. And eventually we come to something that makes sense. And they're like, aha, I like this. We try it out. We get the feedback. Is it good, bad, ugly? We fine tune if we need to. And eventually it's sealed. And one thing that's important though, by the way, anything that we do today with regards to self-custody, it's not a set it and forget it solution. So even if we're perfect now, I mean, this Bitcoin is technology and it's progressing over time. So there's going to be updates, upgrades, fine tunes, things that you need to change slightly as time progresses in order to keep, you know, the state of the art of the whole self-custody relevant, especially when it comes to inheritance. You know, we can't set up an inheritance plan today and then, you know, expect it to be the same in 50 years. So every once in a while, you know, we cater to it. We change a few things. We modify, we fine tune just so that it stays up to date. And this is where we offer remote support plans as well, you know, that, you know, almost everybody, you know, subscribes to because we're on standby. Every month we get in touch with individuals. Okay, this is what we need to do. Boom, boom, boom. And we do it. So their setup is always, you know, state of the art, always updated. There's nothing missing. So we keep on top of this, you know, from now to the end of time. If the Bitcoin way were to disappear, Let's say I drop dead tonight, wake up tomorrow, there's no more Tony. You can take everything about the setup and you can just rebuild it elsewhere. Like, you don't need me. This is how we do things so that, you know, we're not tied into any setup, you know, especially with the collaborative custody. There's a list of instructions. You just take them, you follow them. Nothing changes as far as you're concerned.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a very important point to put out there as well.
Okay. And what about privacy? What do you guys offer in terms of privacy and why should anybody care?
Okay. Well, for one, we're not a financial institution. Okay. So we're not required to do any KYC and we don't. And we are.
No, I mean, in terms of offering people support on having Bitcoin privacy.
Well, Bitcoin privacy, we have no access to any of your data. Okay. We don't know what your seed phrase is. We don't know what your passphrase is. We don't know.
No. I mean, how do you help people make their Bitcoin private in terms of how do they use their Bitcoin privately?
Oh, in that sense. Well, it depends on how they have it initially. If they come from a KYC source, you know, we tell them what their options are. You know, there's coin joining, you know, that a lot of folks have been getting involved in now more and more. We show them how to use it. And we tell them, you know, what the pros and, you know, what the pros around this are and why they should consider it. Because, you know, coming from a KYC source, essentially, you know, you think you're doing it for your own protection. But what you're ultimately doing is putting a target on your back, especially with an asset like Bitcoin, which, you know, has never been seen before and has, you know, an infinite upside valuation to it. So at some point, you know, those that don't have it are going to want to get it by any means possible, and there's going to be attempts to steal it. How these attempts to steal it manifest themselves, in my opinion, I don't think we're going to see a lot of physical attacks because they're not efficient. You know, how many people can you hit over the head with a hammer? You know, it's how they're going to proliferate is online. You know, whether it's from phishing scams, whether it's from cyber trickery, wizardry, whatever you want to call it, that way. So, you know, we let people know how to protect themselves, you know, on that sense, you know, by protecting their internet, locking down routers, you know, like there's a lot of things that we can do. There's a lot involved online that most folks are not aware of because, you know, they've never had the need really to pay attention to it. But now things are a bit different because now you're protecting your money. So nothing is too much anymore when it comes to security, but it has to be done properly, systematically, in a well-organized, managed and disciplined manner so that nothing gets lost, you know, in the whole procedure. So, in terms of privacy, we instruct them, you know, how to properly use, you know, a computer with regards to, you know, submitting information online. Like, don't use your email, use aliases, you know, like tips and the best tips and practices along those lines. Even though, you know, there's a lot of things you can't do no matter how hard you try, but you can minimize the blatant exposure that most people default to. But again, you know, that takes effort, that takes a willingness to want to do this. But with proper education and guidance, you know, at least in our experience with the folks we've spoken to, we've seen a lot of people adopting these tips and practices and actually using them, which is good, which is very promising, because if they learn it, they're going to go tell folks in their immediate circles that this is what they're doing now. And it's easier to pass the message from someone that you know and trust already than from a stranger that, you know, you're just working with. This is my hope that, you know, the message that we put out to folks that come to us and work with us and are happy with our message, that they will take this message and pass it along to their inner circle, which will then pass it along to their inner circle. And before you know it, you know, we have a widespread usage of all these good habits and ways around proper self-custody.
Yeah. All right. And what about collaborative custody? What is that and why should people consider that?
Yeah, collaborative custody is essentially, it's a new service that we put out. It's 100% privacy focused. So again, there's no KYC involved in any of that stuff. Basically, we hold a backup key for you in case something happens to one of yours. We send you an easy to follow key recovery process where you bring back the key and you can use it to withdraw or sign your transactions. The Bitcoin way at no point in time will sign any transaction. And this is something that we make very clear, is that because we're not a financial institution, because we don't do KYC, we will never engage in any signing of transactions just so that to avoid inadvertently being implicated in something, you know? So what we do is that the user always has two keys, and the two keys for the user are required to withdraw or sign. So even by us having one backup key, we cannot technically sign or withdraw anything because it requires two. And you, the user, is the one that always has these two. But obviously, there's a much more pronounced set of security services and features that are, you know, that come into play with the whole collaborative custody system, especially when it comes to inheritance plan on the advanced plan. And we handhold you through the entire process. Your single sig setup automatically gets upgraded to either a 2 out of 3, 3 out of 5, or as high as you want to go, multi-sig setup. And, you know, we teach you, you know, what are the added responsibilities with regards to that. And if you want to, if that makes sense for you, either as a high net worth individual, family, business, you know, we can structure it specifically for your needs. But at no point in time is the Bitcoin way or anyone other than you, the user, in control of sending or withdrawing funds. And again, that same module, should the Bitcoin way disappear tomorrow, the impact to you is zero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of setting up collaborative custody or multi-sigs, do you think it's a better model than just having a single sig wallet, or does it add too much complexity that might get people to mess things up? Because yes, you want to be concerned and you want to protect against attacks from others, but also you don't want to complicate things so much that you end up bricking your own setup and then being unable to access your coins. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. This is why I'm not a very big fan of multi-sig out of the gate for 90% of folks out there. You absolutely do not want to engage in multi-sig if you have no idea what you're doing. Technically, multi-sig is much more secure than single sig. That's for sure. Because, you know, you're involving not just one signing key. You have 3, 5, you know, you can go as literally as high as you want to go. Most multi-sigs are 2 out of 3. Some of them are 3 out of 5. But generally speaking, 2 out of 3, you need 2 keys. So you have 3 hardware wallets. Some folks go as far as putting each one of these hardware wallets in a different geographic location. Okay. Which technically, if somebody attacks you, well, you literally cannot do anything because you don't have the other pieces. But that's not to say that because you're set up like this, that you're going to be 100% safe. If somebody doesn't believe you, they're going to beat you up anyhow. So you're going to have to deal with this problem in a different way. Okay. But technically, yes, it is more secure. So we have these conversations, you know, if you're splitting your hardware wallets and you're saving them in 3 different cities, do you have access to these cities? Should an emergency come up? Like, can you have immediate access to them? If the answer is not an immediate yes, well, then maybe that setup is not for you. You know, like you can't assume everything's going to be comfortable and then you can just, you know, travel whenever you feel like it to go pick it up to spend your money. You have to account for things that you're not normally thinking of. So we think of these. If other people looking after them at those remote locations, do you have absolute trust in these people? What if one day one of these folks stops talking to you for whatever reason? Then what do? You know, then you have a problem. Right? Like, I mean, these small problems become big ones when they happen. So all of these details are complexities that a lot of folks don't think of necessarily immediately when they think about multi-sig. All they see, yeah, I have 3 hardware wallets. I'm Superman now. You know, well, you're Superman if things go along exactly as you want them to go along. But should something change from that formula, then you're not Superman. Then you're done. You know, you can potentially, you know, not have access to your funds, and we don't want this. So we look at multisig very, very carefully, you know, with a lot of meticulousness to ensure that you, the end user, are really in a position to do it properly before you engage in it. But yes, to answer your question, technically, multisig is much more secure because it's not a single point of failure anymore. You know, it's broken up into 3 or more points of failure.
Yeah, I think the lesson that I would like to give my listeners, even the experienced hardcore old timers, is that there is an infinite variety of potential failure modes that you could be subjected to. There's an infinite number of ways in which things can go wrong. Each one of those things is an infinitely tiny possibility. It's not highly likely to happen. But the good thing about a service like the Bitcoin way is that it allows you to think of these failure modes and it allows you to guard against them. So whichever way you choose to make your setup, I'd recommend talking to somebody like the Bitcoin way just to kick the tires of the setup. Even if you're pretty happy with it, even if it's been working for you for years, it's useful to think about all of the potential problems there and see what they have to offer in terms of how can I make my custody more safe, more reliable, more accessible, less likely to be stolen, less likely to be compromised? How do I make it more private? How do I ensure that my node runs exactly like I want it to? How do I make sure that I'm not leaking data? There's always room for improvement. This is really the more productive way of approaching Bitcoin. In other words, a lot of people get into Bitcoin and get fixated with the price and get fixated about trying to time the market and trying to time the time at which they're going to buy and when that they're going to sell. And this is very difficult to predict or understand or profit from. If you're really trying to time the market, you are likely to lose money, I would say, because Bitcoin is extremely unpredictable and you may get it right once, you may get it right twice, three times, but you're going to hit some massive turbulence along the way if you're trying to time it with price. So better than speculating about price is spending your time thinking about your setup, thinking about securing your coins, because that's a lot more important. And that also has a lot more tangible payoff, even though the payoff might be that it doesn't increase your Bitcoins. The mere fact that it prevents you from losing your Bitcoins, prevents you from compromising your Bitcoins in certain ways, is truly tangible, because you have to think about the alternative scenarios that might happen. So I urge everybody to constantly be thinking about this and constantly be planning on improving it.
Yeah, one thing I would add to this is that also be very careful about the hardware that you use. I know there's a lot of folks out there, you know, like people that advise on Bitcoin self-custody and you offer consulting services and all that, but are also recommending hardware that, you know, they shouldn't be recommending. I mean, the first giveaway is just look at their, if they have a web store, just look at the web store. What kind of products are they selling you and recommending you for self-custody? Is it like a Ledger or something similar? You know, if you see products like this, this should be your first red flag to avoid. Because even though the excuse that they use is that, you know, used in a multi-sig, even something like this is fine, because they're just sort of brushing off the risk because of the use of different components. That's not the point. You know, you don't want to put people at risk simply to sell them a product because you are getting an affiliate profit from it. Okay. So stay away from folks that engage in such behavior. These folks don't necessarily have your best interest in mind. They are there to sell a product. They are there to make an affiliate markup to get you in and out. This is not how it's supposed to be done. You know, when you're doing Bitcoin, you either stick to the proper Bitcoin white paper requirements, the Bitcoin ethos, using the right hardware that was designed for that purpose, or just don't do it. Stay out of it rather than doing it the wrong way, something going wrong, and then you blaming Bitcoin for it. Bitcoin has nothing to do with it. It's just poor decision making, poor responsibility at the end of the day, and it's on you, you know? So we try to bring awareness to this as much as possible, you know, especially, you know, by staying on top of the news. You know, like it's a lot of work doing the work, but it's also much more time consuming to stay on top of what's happening in the space in general. You know, what company has now all of a sudden engaged in chain analysis? Well, fuck, you know, you need to know who it is so that you can avoid using it and avoid advising folks to use it, bringing awareness to what just happened. You know, a lot of things along those lines are important because, you know, they can all be potentially used to cause a problem for you and your money at some point. So you want to stay away from all these things as much as possible.
Yeah. Could you tell us, what is your problem with Ledger? I have the problem as well, but let you say it.
I don't have a problem with Ledger per se specifically. It's not like I'm targeting them specifically. I'm targeting all closed source projects. The issue with Ledger is something that was publicly put out, you know, where they announced that they could technically retrieve a private key with a firmware update, with a firmware upgrade. They posted that themselves, you know, on Twitter. So who in their right mind would continue using a product that could potentially do this? And now they're even going as far as offering a service where, you know, they're telling you, give us your information, give us your keys, and trust us. We'll protect it for you. Don't worry. Everything will be cool. Like, what exactly are you doing? Like, what kind of hypocrisy is this? Like, blatant form of hypocrisy. You know, it's ridiculous. So, yeah. So in that sense, of course, we'd never recommend them. Of course, we wouldn't support their efforts whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that was pretty striking. And I think it kind of defeats the point. I mean, just in terms of the security of the setup, the fact that you're going through the theater of using a hardware wallet while also having it essentially backdoored is just a lot less secure than simply leaving the money with an exchange. I think it would probably be better to just leave it at a financial institution. I mean, obviously, with a financial institution, you do have the added risk of the fact that they are going to be likely gambling with your money, as most exchanges were doing during the last bear market collapse. So they could blow up that way. But I think with Ledger, it's just such a giant honeypot. The fact that a lot of people who have access to the Ledger code and to the Ledger operating system might be able to access your coins. And it's just opening up a giant can of worms of possibilities of things to go wrong.
Yeah, and when the Bitcoin price goes parabolic, you know, like we go back to this price, but because it's going to be such a big catalyst into bringing so much attention to the space, this is where you're going to start seeing the weak cracks become bigger. You know, so if you're not careful now, even though you might not be directly hit or going through anything, you know, inconvenient at the moment, in extreme scenarios, this is where you're likely to encounter such a thing. And you don't want that. Like, you don't want to be panicking last minute with regards to the protection of your funds, because either you're going to do something, you know, in a haste, or something's going to happen to you and you're going to wake up with a balance of zero. So we want to avoid all these problems. There are easy ways to avoid and mitigate all these risks. It's just having the right information, the proper guidance, and not skipping steps. You know, like, there's no shortcut here. It's not that many steps to begin with. But even with that, some folks still insist, you know, they want to skip a step to get it done faster or more convenient and all that stuff. Responsibility over convenience, 24/7, 365 days a year. It's that simple.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Tony, thank you so much for this. This has been extremely helpful, extremely useful. And to everybody listening, check out thebitcoinway.com. for more information, and book your complimentary 30-minute call with Tony or the team and kick the tires of your setup. If you're new, figure out how to get started. If you're old, you could still think about ways of improving. There's always ways to improve, and stay on your toes.
100%. Thank you for having me, Saif. It was a pleasure being here.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.